From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. The state's health department released a report this month about COVID-19 deaths from the beginning of the pandemic through this September. Most people who died from COVID-19 in the first year and a half of the pandemic had known underlying medical conditions. By far, the most common were cardiovascular diseases, including high blood pressure, followed by diabetes and chronic respiratory disease. Megan Tompkins is an epidemiologist for the state. She says this was not a surprise to her team, but it's important information for Alaskans because underlying health conditions are so common. Two-thirds of the state's population has them, including young people.
Risk does increase with age group, and so do underlying medical conditions generally increase with age group. But if people want to ensure that they are protected and relatively safe from a severe outcome, vaccination is the best way to do that.
More than 650 Alaskans died from COVID-19 by the end of September. More than half of the deaths were among men. The death rate increased substantially after the Delta variant emerged in Alaska this June. This study does not include October and November, which were among the deadliest months of the pandemic in Alaska, and account for an additional 199 deaths.
And we have a large number of deaths added during this last quarter of the year that would be interesting to analyze. We have no reason to think that they would necessarily be different.
The health department recommends vaccination, booster shots, and masking in public to prevent COVID-19 deaths. A Dillingham area man is missing and an Anchorage resident is dead after their boat sank Wednesday night on Prince William Sound near Whittier. Lukey Acklecock of Dillingham and Stefan Weingarth of Anchorage were coming back from a hunting trip on Esther Island when they encountered bad weather. Weingarth contacted another group in a separate boat before 6 p.m. to report that the bow of their vessel was underwater, that they were 5 minutes outside of Whittier and sinking. According to a trooper report, witnesses said seas were up to 6 feet tall and winds blowing at 40 knots. The U.S. Coast Guard in Juneau and Anchorage were contacted and immediately dispatched a vessel and aircraft from Valdez, but bad weather slowed them down en route to the scene. Troopers said the Coast Guard found Weingarth's body at 10:15 p.m. with a life jacket on, 5 miles northeast of Whittier. The vessel was located, but Acklecock was not. Bad weather hampered search efforts again yesterday and today. The U.S. Coast Guard ended its search last night. Providing every Alaskan with a high-speed internet connection is a challenge, considering the state's far-flung geography and extreme weather. But the new federal infrastructure law has $1.5 billion for broadband in Alaska, and that will help the state reach its goal. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
A lot of money will be coming into Alaska in the next few years to expand broadband, more than the state has seen before.
Well, I think it's a huge opportunity for, connectivity.
That's Hallie Bissett. She chaired Governor Mike Dunleavy's task force on broadband. It just wrote a report that will help the state decide how to spend that $1.5 billion. Bissett says the first step will be to connect communities using satellites.
We have so many villages that are still not even getting, basic service.
Eventually, the goal is to replace the satellites in some communities with fiber optic cables. One of the hoops the state must pass through is to establish a new broadband office. Bissett says the office will be important to making sure all broadband money is spent effectively. It will take some time for the new federal infrastructure money to reach communities. First, the federal government must map existing internet connections down to individual buildings. That will take at least a year. Bissett says the best guess now is that it will take up to 10 years to connect the entire state with broadband. One area where broadband can make a difference is in schools. State Education Commissioner Michael Johnson served on the task force, and he says broadband access is essential to students.
You can teach well without technology, but technology extends the benefit of access to content. And as I've always said, technology extends the benefit of a great teacher to more and more kids.
Dunleavy now must decide what to do with the task force's recommendations. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
While the nation is focusing on the emergence of the Omicron variant of COVID-19, Delta is still responsible for a widespread outbreak in the remote island town of Petersburg. More than 7% of the town's 3,000 residents got infected in November alone. On the front lines of this outbreak is a team of home health nurses going door-to-door treating patients. KFSK's Angela Denning has their story.
This is our COVID section right here.
Nurse Kirsten Testoni is sorting through medical equipment inside the home health supply room. Metal shelves stacked with supplies take up one of the walls.
Hey, Yvonne. Yeah. Do you have any more of those batteries? We're like out of pulse oxes.
Yes, ma'am.
Pulse ox is short for pulse oximeter, those little clamps that go on your finger and measure your blood oxygen levels. They're in high demand right now in Petersburg.
Come in with sort of a plan, but your day goes from 0 to 60.
Testoni manages a team of 8. 3 years ago, there were only 2 home care nurses in this office. The additional staff has come from other departments, ERs, clinics, long-term care. Lena Odegaard had worked in all of them. She says she likes home health because she can focus on one patient at a time. But it's also challenging.
There's just so many elements you can't control, whereas when you're in the facility, you can kind of restrict visitors and what people are doing to a point.
Sometimes there are patients who should go to the hospital, but they don't want to.
We find that quite often in home health, especially during this pandemic. Sometimes there's a little bit of a resistance.
Many times the nurses will transport patients to the hospital themselves, or they can call an ambulance. Stephanie Romine says home health is different than her many years working in the hospital.
You never know. You can walk in and find someone on the floor, or, you know, you really don't know what you're walking into a lot of times.
Many hospitals have home health departments, but it's different in a rural town like Petersburg, says Jared Kosin. He heads the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association.
You're going to have almost, in some respects, a more nimble healthcare system, because everybody knows everyone, and when we're in a crisis like this, can we meet this problem head on before it becomes a bigger problem and requires hospitalization?
During this latest Delta surge in Alaska, it's been crucial to keep people out of the hospital, not just Petersburg's local clinics, but also keeping people from getting medevaced to the bigger hospitals in Anchorage. Plus, it's a more personal way to receive care. This team in Petersburg is planning on keeping up this level of home health care, even when they're no longer caring for COVID patients. Testoni is in her car gearing up to visit a small house where 3 people are infected with COVID. She puts on 2 face masks, goggles, a hairnet, a gown, and blue rubber gloves.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Natasha Lyons answers the door. She's 43. She's in a black sweatshirt, her blonde hair pulled back.
Sorry, my house is not being weak. Don't have any energy.
In the last week, she's been to the ER twice.
I was so bad and so weak, I couldn't even get up to go pee at one point. I had to have help from my son.
Home health drove her back and forth to the hospital. She received oxygen, IV fluids, monoclonal antibody treatment, and steroids.
If it wasn't for the home health people, I wouldn't have made it, because I was too weak to drive myself. I was too weak to even walk. I was too weak to do anything. It's been very scary for me.
Vitamins and stuff. Testoni Excellent. Checks out her oxygen levels.
Oh, it was 98. That's Ooh. The best it's been since forever. The lowest I think was 84.
Yeah, that's pretty low.
Like many Petersburg residents this team has been caring for this month, Lyons is not vaccinated, and she hasn't changed her mind even after 2 trips to the ER. But Testoni never pushes the issue.
You know, that's not our role. We don't do that. I mean, we are going to take care of people regardless of what their choices are.
Walking back to the car, Testoni says her job isn't to convince patients of anything. It's to meet them where they are. And so far, that's been enough to keep them alive. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The snow looks like it's going to stick with us for the weekend and even into the beginning of next week. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated snow showers, low around 20 degrees. Tomorrow, scattered snow showers and highs in the mid-20s. There's a chance of snow on Sunday night with a high right around 30. Monday could be partly sunny with snow likely later in the afternoon. Currently 30 degrees with light snow.